This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
The information provided or any opinions expressed in this show are of a general nature only and should not be construed or relied on as a recommendation to invest in a financial product or class of financial products. You should seek financial advice specific to your circumstances from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. A disclosure statement can be obtained free of charge. You're listening to Radio Hawke's Bay. This is a program called Canny View, and it's my pleasure, as always, to have on the phone Brent Alcock from Stewart Group, based in Wellington. Brent is. How are you going, Brent?
I'm going well, Ken. After a slight stint in hospital, I had pneumonia and was there for a couple of weeks. So nice to be out into the land of the living, thanks to the great new and efficient New Zealand health system.
Good on you. Hope you're wrapped up and keeping warm.
Indeed. Here in Wellington, it's an overcast day, but keeping warm nonetheless. How are you going, Ken?
Oh, pretty much the same. We had a day yesterday which was almost like summer. I had to take my jacket off at one stage. It was so warm. But today is very grey and cold.
I heard that. All those merino sheep that had been sheared during lambing season would have lost their wool for absolutely no reason, given the weather that you guys have been having there. A blessing for you guys up there in the Hawke's Bay.
That's right. Now, today we're going to talk about many and varied topics today, but just before we get into them, Brent, just remind our listeners, Stewart Group, what are you guys all about?
Yeah, sure. Stewart Group's an independent, non-aligned financial advice planning firm whose sole goal is to help families and whānau achieve financial goals and dreams in the easiest and most stress-free manner. Combined, we've got over 220 years of giving advice through our five or so advisors that are on board, and we'd love to have a chat and create a custom roadmap for listeners and clients along the road to financial freedom.
Good on you. And today we're going to start off chat today with about bricks and mortar. You know, I've been a big fan. Well, I'm getting too old now to buy another house and rent it out and all that sort of stuff. But over the years, I was a big fan of rentals and doing them up and seeing my investment grow. But I suppose the good thing about people who are looking at buying a house, Brent, and this is what I thought, was it was a passive investment. I borrowed some more money off my the house I lived in, and I put someone in there, and they paid the mortgage off, and whatever else they paid, kept up with R&M and all that sort of stuff, and I was just watching my money grow. But that's not what you recommend these days, is it?
Well, it's an interesting thing, and we've had this discussion over a number of years.
Yes, we have.
As I remember, Ken, because it's your daughter.
That's right.
Was looking at property about two or so years ago, and we had a conversation about that. Look, I think that it's relevant for the time. And I'm not going to in any way go down an ageist argument here, Ken, but perhaps the time that you were first looking at that was the 1970s or the 1980s.
Yes, it was indeed.
A completely different market. Think about what the cost of an airfare or even a boat fare on the old RMS Canberra to go over to Australia or Fiji would have been in those days. Markets change. And the market that we're in now is a much more free flowing of information. You know, we see news headlines for better or worse, good things and bad things, screened across our TVs or the internet or YouTube and Facebook and social media in a much more immediate fashion. So information and data is much more freely available.
Mm.
That's a way of saying that what was true in the 1970s and 80s might have done yourself an extremely great financial outcome in those times for now, but from where you're positioned today, I think you've got to take the information that's available in the market and tailor it to what your specific goals and objectives are. So it might not be so prudent in current market at present.
No, indeed. And do you think investing in housing at this point in time is getting a bit of a bad rap because of those high interest rates and those, you know, people were just getting exorbitant amounts for their houses, and then all of a sudden the interest rates go up and a lot of people being caught almost speaking figuratively with their pants down. Is that what's affecting the housing market?
Yeah, it basically is. Look, I've done a couple of calculations just to get prepared here, and for every, and you've got to compare it to what it is, and you mentioned it in terms of when you buying property, there's two reasons. You're either buying it to live in, so it's personal, and I've got no issue with that, or it's buying it for investment. Now, if you're buying it for investment, you've got to look at what the return is on that property. So for every $100 that you're getting in rent, there's a model called the capital markets model, but not to bore you with it, effectively it's $1,500. So that multiply that $100 rent by $1,500, and it means that the value of the property for $100 rent is about $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, if you're paying something like $500 in rent, then the value of the property you're living in is about $750,000. Now, I can't go out and buy a property at the moment for $750,000.
Right.
And I'm paying $500 rent. So under a CAPM model, property was exceedingly overvalued. And we see that. I've seen that in the marketplace. Ken, as I shared with you when we were talking about your daughter, I'm also looking and have been looking since returning from Singapore 3 or 4 years ago. And a property that we're currently renting, they wanted around about $1.1 million for. Well, sold... a similar property sold down the road for about $950,000, mm-hmm. Half a year ago, and one next door that's not too dissimilar is now going for about $820,000.
Yeah.
So the market's corrected.
Yes, it has.
And it's the rental yield you're getting. There's two things that you get from property. It's the capital growth and the rental yield. Well, we're not seeing capital growth at the moment, and we're not seeing capital growth because of exactly what you pointed out. Interest rates are going up.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of uncertainty about what government policy is. We've had a change of government regime where it was all about green and clean, everything before, but now it seems to be, well, let's open up the land and allow people to build on that land and look at the consequences of that later. That seems to be a little bit of what the current coalition government is saying. And that then forces, if you open up land, it increases supply. That then forces the price of land down. So we're seeing a number of shifts. I wouldn't say seismic,
no,
but they're significant to such an extent that we have seen corrections in the property market of up to, you know, 25% to 30% so far.
Yeah. Now, those stats that you mentioned, they're relative to location, though, aren't they? Because, I mean, you might not be able to buy a house where you are for $700,000, but you could probably buy a house where we live in Hawke's Bay somewhere for less than that. So if I'm getting $500 or $600 or $700 a week in rent, it's not a bad investment, is it?
So I'm living in Wellington, and I note that the price of property in Wellington seems to be a lot higher even than in places like Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is relevant to where you're living, but I would suggest also that there's a corollary to that, Ken, which is your earning capacity in a place like Wellington, because of the demand for civil servants and things of that nature, people of that nature, vocations of that nature, might be a little bit higher than the demand in, say, the Hawke's Bay. Not to say that the Hawke's Bay is not a part of God's great
yes.
plan of this earth. And certainly we've alluded to that weather-wise. But, you know, you might be able to get a higher level of wage in different parts of the country. So it's a factor of that as well. It's a factor of the servicing of the mortgage and what people can afford to pay and what they're willing to pay. And mathematically, I think that goes across the board from Invercargill in Southland. And, you know, you've got people like Marcus Lush, who are on the nightly news there at ZB, who's moved from Auckland down to Southland for that very mm-hmm. economic reason, or for lifestyle reasons as well, I'm sure. Down to Dunedin, which has been a thriving property market. And you look at Westport and what's happened there in prices, similar to Christchurch, and how Christchurch has been a real boon following on from the disaster that was the earthquake scenario there in 2011. So those factors happen. Yes. You've had that extraordinary factor, of course, the terrible tragedy of both Cyclone Gabrielle and the weather events that you've been having in the Hawke's Bay, which again impact to some degree upon property prices. So, yeah, it's been interesting times, but challenging times and changing times. But a very valid point, Ken, that where you're located and location does, of course, have a bearing upon property and prices.
Now, I know all the advisors from the Stewart Group are very big on diversification, and it is a great idea. So one of those diversification funds that we could be investing in for our future would be KiwiSaver. Now, who would you be recommending to Brent that KiwiSaver is the way to go? Or is that just part of that diverse range of investing that you're talking about?
Look, I think it depends upon individuals' goals. KiwiSaver is a wonderful vehicle. If you're below the age of 65, it has certain tax advantages and you get the government co-contribution. So there's as we might say, money for jam. Mm. There's an extra $540 or $540-odd that the government will contribute if you're doing the KiwiSaver. Now, the thing that you mentioned about diversification is quite an interesting one, Ken, in that if I need funds and I've got a property, I can't go and sell my bathroom.
No.
I can't go and leverage my kitchen. It's a one entity. It's there in one particular suburb, in one part of New Zealand, in one province, in one country. And I can't realise that. Whereas if I've got liquid funds or investment funds that are apart from my property, I am able to access that in the unlikely event or unfortunate event that you've got to go to hospital because you've got pneumonia and you've been subjected to some emergency. So KiwiSaver's ideal if you want to keep funds outside for a longer term. The big downside with KiwiSaver is you can't touch it unless you suffer quite serious financial hardship until you're 65.
Yeah.
One side event there is that you can use it for your first home purchase.
Yep.
So that's one advantage. So you've got your KiwiSaver for your longer-term retirement. So if you think of things in buckets, your KiwiSaver is for your longer-term retirement funding or to supplement retirement funding. It's a hedge. It's hedging your bets in case something happens with national superannuation or government superannuation or pension. In the longer term, by the time I turn 65, it might or might not be there. Then you've got, outside of KiwiSaver, money that you can access. And the question then becomes, well, should I look at term deposits? Should I look at on-call accounts? Should I look at tax-efficient, flexible funds that I can get my hands on in the case of an emergency or in the case that I'm saving for a specific goal, such as the purchase of a property?
I wonder, you mentioned leveraging your bathroom or your living room. I know some people who have been considering reverse mortgages. What's your point of view on those? I mean, are they a good thing or a bad thing?
So it, again, depends upon your circumstances. I had a lot of experience with reverse mortgages in Australia when I was living in Australia and providing advice there for a period of over 17 years. And reverse mortgages were all the rage just before the 2008-09-10 financial crisis. And what tends to happen is that, or people that look at reverse mortgages, if they've got a lot of their assets tied up in the one specific asset of their property, then they want to try and unlock that. But just as compounding interest is your saving grace if you start it, the age, a young age in your teens or in your 20s, just as compounding interest is a wonderful thing over time, from an investment perspective, compounding interest will also eat into the value of your property much more aggressively on a reverse mortgage. So you'll end up probably in about 10 or 15 years with the value of that asset being not exhausted, but being eaten up. So it depends on circumstances. If you're a couple, no children, or you don't want to leave anything, or you've spoken and there's no inheritance to go to your children, then it's something to look at. But if you've got obligations and children, grandchildren or whānau that you want to look after on your demise, then a reverse mortgage should be very, very cautiously looked at with a team of advisors, not just your financial advisor and planner, but also your accountant, your lawyer, because they are a contract, and contracts always favour those that are writing them. Ken, that's the kindest way I can say that.
Yes, indeed. Tell us about PIE funds. Who's using a PIE fund?
Yeah, so a PIE fund is a tax-advantaged entity. PIE stands for basically a tax-advantaged entity where you contribute. You can contribute small amounts. It basically means a prescribed investment under government law that is taxed at a lower tax rate than what your personal marginal tax rate would be. So, for example, if you're on the top tax rate, I think 39% nowadays, the top tax rate within a PIE fund is 28. So there's what we would say, there's an 11% advantage. If you're on a lower tax rate and you're paying even at the lowest rate, 14% tax, the lowest in a PIE fund, 10.5%. So there's still a 4% advantage. The factor here isn't driven around tax. It's driven around what's the most efficient way of getting to my goal.
Yeah.
So families and individuals should really be focused on what the goal is. Is the goal a retirement goal? So, are you sitting on a beach supping on cocktails, or are you playing golf, or are you attending the opera? What's the goal? And putting some figures around that so you can achieve that, Ken.
I guess if I'm going to ask you a question now, and you haven't got a crystal ball, so you won't really know, but you know, there is an increasing feeling of doom and gloom out there, right across the board, financial, people sitting at home worrying about paying their mortgage. But there is some talk about the Reserve Bank easing interest rates maybe later this year, perhaps, or I don't know, maybe early next year, but you haven't got a crystal ball, so I don't really know. Is that going to be a saving grace, the Reserve Bank dropping their interest rate by half a point or a point? Is this as good as what it sounds or not?
Look, there's a couple of factors there that you've mentioned, Ken. And I'd remind listeners, the darkest hour is always before the dawn.
Yes.
And we are going through tough times. The Reserve Bank here in New Zealand was preeminent in raising interest rates. We went harder and faster than Australia did, for better or worse. It looks like Australia might have to raise interest rates in the coming month or 2 months. That's what the word is out of Australia. So all of those Kiwis who have moved from here over to Australia looking for a better life might be facing a higher interest rate. I don't have a crystal ball, but all of the economic indicators that I'm seeing and hearing, my gut feeling is that it's possible that there could be an interest rate decrease in November. If I was the Reserve Bank, I remember that there was a problem around about November 2 years ago, and that created the headache of people spending money over Christmas and coming back to their credit cards in February. So my gut feeling is that although the Reserve Bank could reduce interest rates in November, they might be more prudent and keep them on hold over the Christmas. People are already feeling the pain. We've seen it. We've seen it in the retail space. In Wellington, David Jones is gone, and Auckland, Smith & Co. is gone. The Warehouse Group is cutting back. Sportscraft's going in Newmarket. Area 51, the closing of SPQR. Sifone, which spent $5.8 million on its fit-out there in Auckland only 4 years ago, is going. Krenfeldt's here in Wellington. You're seeing a lot of structural changes within the economy, and that will take time. That takes around about 18 months to work through. Go back to our broadcast of 18 months ago. Go back to Nick Stewart's articles. Nick has written 11 articles on property and the economy relating to property over the past 7 years. And all of what's been written about has borne out to play. So people will hold on to property for as long as they can. I think we're in the slump phase, where we've got more sellers in the market than buyers. I see that we're coming through to an area where there's little confidence. And when there's little confidence in the market, that's that doom and despair sort of feeling.
Yep.
I think the Reserve Bank will keep a hold on interest rates, although, you know, they might want to take half a percent off in November, December, but will that encourage spending? I think it'll be like coming down a mountain. I just think they'll keep their foot on the brake for just a little wee while. And in the summer period of February, when they come back after the Christmas break, I think that's when they'll make a decision in a positive way on interest rates.
Now, just in closing, you mentioned the magical figure, 7 years there. And we have talked many times about cycles, and there always was a seven-year cycle. 7 years are good, 7 years are bad. Are we at the beginning of the seven-year cycle, or are we partway through it, or where do you see us being in that seven-year cycle, if there is such a thing these days?
I'd have to go back to some Shakespeare leanings. Now is the winter of our discontent. You know, I think we're in that time of pruning and cutting back. I think that we're seeing individuals, even myself, I'm cutting back. Last night we had a dinner that we made from home from what was left in the fridge. We're not going out there and spending. I think we're at the beginning of a regeneration cycle where we are taking stock of what we've had. Property prices ran up phenomenally from the beginning of COVID in 2020 all the way through 21 and some part of 22. And just as if you have a party on champagne and red wine and you eat too much, you know, after that party there's a hangover and a day of reckoning. And I think that's where we're at, Ken. So focus on the things that you can control. Don't be distracted by noise in the market. Avoid noise. Avoid those distractions. You know, remember that every newspaper and every, to some degree, YouTube article, they're trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
They're trying to sell you their concept or their idea, for better or worse, and sometimes for nefarious or not so good reasons. So focus on the things you can control. You know, your family. I'm not saying control your family, but focus on your family. Focus on your career. Focus on your own health. Focus on your family's health. Focus on mental well-being, and be grateful and happy for the things that are within your purview, within your boundary. You can't control interest rates. You can't control the winter that we're going through now. You can't control those extraneous events like cyclones that come through. But what you can do is prepare for those events. And I think that's the area we're in right now, Ken.
Well said, as always, Brent. My pleasure to talk with you. You look after yourself, and I look forward to talking to you same time, same place next time. The information provided or any opinions expressed in this show are of a general nature only and should not be construed or relied on as a recommendation to invest in a financial product or class of financial products. You should seek financial advice specific to your circumstances from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. A disclosure statement can be obtained free of charge.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.